It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Cowboy Stories and welcome to part two of my interview with Steve Layton. If you haven't had an opportunity to listen to part one, I would recommend heading over there first because we're just going to dive right in. Would you say that cowboys today are as good as they were back in the day?
Oh, probably as far as skills, as roping and horsemanship, I think that's evolved a lot through the years, better than maybe even some of the older ones. That's one thing about ranching. It has, it's kind of a thing that you don't do without horses. And so my point being that if you love horses and love to be around horses and like to just be on one and be able to work on one and raise them and train them, and ranching kind of fits in that
niche.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know.
But that occupation, I guess, being the need, you've got a use for a horse, and being able to use a horse and work with him every day, it kind of fits the lifestyle. And if you like horses, it gives you a chance to teach a horse and be able to really appreciate a good horse. And I think that's a kind of a love that I hope I've passed on to these kids, and I think I have, or maybe not I have, but they have taken to horses, and it's part of our life. Yeah.
Yeah, it's your fault.
It's your fault.
I see people that are in the cattle business that have gentle cattle, and I guess they don't have so much need for horses and they don't use their horses, and I think they're missing out on a lot by not kind of incorporating horses and horsemanship. And my kids has been involved in rodeo and all kinds of stuff like that with their horses and their kids too, and I think that's a big part of our life.
Yeah,
that's been a really plus to being in the cattle business is the horses.
Do you raise your own horses?
We have quite a few, and we've bought horses too.
Okay. So,
both.
Is there a certain kind of breed or bloodline that you like?
They're all quarter horses, but different ones that we've had.
Had pretty good success with our Wade's horses.
Yeah, we've had some colts from LeVar Wade's stud that we've had good success with.
One we raised and one we bought, and they were both good ranch and rodeo horses.
Mm-hmm. Seemed like we're always, through the years, we're always, we don't have a lot of horses, but it seemed like we're always buying a colt and raising him or having one born and working on a colt, which works pretty good when you're starting a colt, because you got the other horses to kind of go with him, and the horses, they just kind of grow up with us, and they seem like they work out better than one you buy that is already broke. Seem like the ones we either raise or buy and break them, we kind of keep them forever, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Part of the family.
Kind of like cows. Like,
yeah.
Those cows that you were talking about that just kind of didn't come from there and got dumped out there. They didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Horses are kind of the same way. If they're kind of raised and grow up and know how to get around and how to survive out there, they do a lot better, it seems like.
That's a good thought about the cattle that are born and raised out there. They are acclimated to that ranch in that country, and they know how to make a living even on a dry year. They do pretty good. We've had a good year this last winter and spring, but the couple of years before that were really unusually dry, and our cattle seem to get along and do better than most. They just the genetics of them and just the way they're raised, and they know how to do what they have to do out there to have a calf every year and make a living.
So do you try to raise your own replacements?
Heifers. Uh-huh. Yeah, all the heifers that go back out there, we raise them. We wean our calves in October, and they all come into our farm down to Beaver Dam. We have a little feed lot there, and we'll feed those calves through the winter. We raise some hay there, and the replacement heifers will go back out in the spring, probably in when the feed's green out there in March or so. And we buy a few bulls every year. They're just a pretty hardy bunch of cattle. They do good out there.
I don't know. I was just thinking about like the good horses that you've talked about and about roping those wild bulls and everything, and how that would definitely take a good horse to be able to get that job done successfully. When you think about some of your favorite horses or the funnest thing you've ever roped, like, do you have any stories along those lines that you'd like to share?
I was thinking about that the other day, that we used to rope those wild cattle out there a lot, and I don't think we do that so much anymore. We try not to run them because it makes them wild, but we occasionally will have to run something and rope them and bring them in on a rope. But anyway, those horses back in those days, there was the old sorrel horse that we call Blaze, and the old clabber horse, and there was an old buckskin horse we called Buck. And anyway, those old horses, they could get it done. They had done it enough. I don't think they had fear like our modern horses do, because they took some pretty good knocks, roping cattle and leading them in and stuff. There's places they still do that. Talking to Don Lindsay,
uh-huh.
And you interviewed him about being out to Eckers out
yeah.
there. Yeah, that's quite a wild cow deal they were, and he said he was out there for a couple of years or something like
mm-hmm.
that was interesting to hear him talk about that. I don't know, I can't really pinpoint just one or different ones. It just seemed like we used to do that a lot.
Yeah, and kind of got
years
them
ago.
Cleaned up a little bit, and now
yeah,
they're
where
a little more.
It's kind of a thing that we try to not do to run those cattle. We'll end up catching a few of those maverick bulls. They'll just get with our other cattle, and we'll get them in a corral and get them loaded up and get them out of there as we see them. And the last few years, we haven't got as many, but we still know there's a few out there.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of part of the territory out there. They just show up.
Who would you say you learned the most from growing up, and who were some of the best cowboys you ever rode with?
Oh, I learned a lot from my dad. My dad, he was a good cowboy and knew cattle good and a good horseman, good roper. And I think I learned from him because I was with him every day, yeah. But he didn't really have a lot of people that he hired and had ride with him, but mostly just family out there, yeah.
In your words, how would you define the word cowboy?
A cowboy to me is a man that knows cattle and knows horses and can read those animals and has been around them enough to know what they're going to do before they do it. Kind of think of a cowboy as somebody with a lot of skills to be able to manage livestock and know the country and know when to move cattle and just a man that has got a love of livestock and cattle and horses and the knowledge and the ability and the want to take care of them and make them make a good home for them and make them produce good food for people, I guess.
I like that. That's one of my favorite questions to ask people because it seems like everybody's answer is the same but different, if that makes any sense. Like they all, try to word it a little bit differently. And I like hearing all the different answers. It's been cool.
Well, there's a little bit different definition of cowboys on our side of it, where we're raising cattle and that's our business and that's what we do. And we consider ourselves cowboys. And then there's the competition cowboy, the rodeo cow, and those guys are really talented and good cowboys too. They have a lot of skills and I consider both of them cowboys, but kind of on a different scale than people that are ranching and raising livestock.
Did you ever do much rodeoing?
Not too much. Used to just go to practice ropings mostly more than I never did really like to get in competition and stuff. But we used to go to our neighbors a lot and go to the little practice ropings every week, stuff like that, just having fun.
Okay. Well, I think I've asked all the questions that I was meaning to, but I don't want to cut you off if you have any other memories that you want to share, if you've had any stories that have popped up that you want to share, feel free.
A little story that Roquel and I was talking about, this might be a little lengthy for what you're doing.
No, but, go for it.
This would go back in the, maybe around 1970. I would have been maybe 20 years old, something like that. I had a cousin. His name is Lenny Larson. Grew up down in California, and he went to vet school and became a vet. And as a young vet right out of vet school, he got a job, and I'll have to back up this story a little bit. There was some people by the name of Ellsworth that were from down in southern Arizona down to Safford and Gila Valley down there. They ranched down there, and they got into the racehorse business. Rex Ellsworth, and I can't remember his brother's name, and they got acquainted with an Iranian, rich Iranian guy. His name was Ali Khan, and he had this stud horse by the name of Khaled. And anyway, these Ellsworths were able to buy this really, really well-bred racehorse that had won a lot. anyway, this horse, stud horse, they had a lot of success with him, and they got in the racehorse business really big, and they bought quite a place in Chino, California,
okay,
and had just a racehorse ranch there. And this Khaled was the sire of a horse by the name of Swaps, which he won the Kentucky Derby back in the maybe the 50s or 60s. He's a pretty famous horse. And they had another one, or they had two or three horses that really did good and made them millions of dollars. They did really well. Anyway, my cousin, back to Lenny Larson, my cousin, they were kind of relatives to the Ellsworths and through the Mormon heritage down in the Gila Valley down there. Anyway, they knew these Ellsworth people, and so did my dad and family, and they were quite well acquainted with them. Anyway, he got a job as a young veterinarian on this racehorse ranch down there. And I would go down there in the summer and spend a few days with him at a time. Anyway, just one of the memories of, as a kid, going down there and spending some time with my cousin down there on that racehorse ranch. And this was a big deal for me back then. We got on an airplane and flew up to Sacramento to watch a horse that he had bought through the Ellsworths run a race up there. And the horse won the race. And we won some money.
That's cool.
Anyway, it's just kind of a memory I had way back. Horses have always been part of our lives.
That's cool that you could see the racehorse side of it, too.
Yeah.
I bet that was interesting.
And those Ellsworth guys, they were just ranchers down there, but they got into these racehorses. So they got the right pedigrees and made some money doing it. And were very successful at it.
I think the horses are what has always intrigued me, too. Like, I like the cows. I like to look at a pretty cow. But I feel like the horses are what kept me involved.
I grew up here in St. George. We had a little, St. George was 5,000 people back when I graduated from high school in 1966, one stoplight. We lived just south of town, which is all town now.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little farm and a place there. And kind of did the same thing we're doing now, but the freeway came through in the early 70s. Before that, there wasn't a freeway, you know, when the freeway went down through the gorge and up through the middle of St. George and on up through Utah I-15. Anyway, it went through our place and kind of didn't leave a lot there. And then from there, we bought the little farm down to Beaver Dam, there along the Beaver Dam Wash. And so we've been down there since the early 70s, and we don't have a big farm, but we had more than we had here in St. George. We're farming probably 60, 70 acres, and a little feedlot there that we feed our own calves there through the winter. And we raise some hay there and pasture, and it just kind of is part of the ranch and our headquarters down there.
So after the freeway came through, then you had to try to figure something else out of where your headquarters would be.
Happened to move somewhere else.
Yeah. So in order to get down on the strip, do you have to come back up to St. George and go down, or can you go from Beaver Dam?
You can go from Beaver Dam over to Mesquite and then up over a little, really pretty steep little road over the mountain, then back over into our country. But the road has gotten so bad going over that mountain that we normally come up the gorge and then go out from St. George.
Okay.
It's a little further, but the road's so bad the other way. We don't go that much anymore. We used to do that all the time. But it's just kind of a thing that the road's got so bad.
Yeah. It's too bad.
It takes us a couple hours from where we live to the ranch. One way. And then from St. George, it's dirt road all the way out there.
So when you go, do you make sure you spend a couple days out there at a time?
Or? If we're doing something, we're out there, we'll stay there at the little cabin. A lot of times if we're just going out to check waters, which we do at least once a week, and just to check on things. We'll go out and back in a day.
Okay.
It's kind of a day's project just to go out and back a lot of times.
Yeah.
To get around and check the ranch and everything. We kind of drop down into a country they call Paucum Mud Mountain. Off down in there.
And do you go south as far as the river? Like, is the river a border?
Not
you?
Quite. There's a maybe one allotment between us and the river down there.
Okay.
From our lowest country, you can actually see some water in Lake Mead.
That's cool.
It's kind of low right now. I don't know. You can now, but normally you can.
That's cool.
In Grand Wash Bay. Down there. So we're within eyesight, you can see down there quite a ways at times.
Huh.
Our lower country goes down in what they call the Pakun Desert. And it's a pretty good desert country. It makes a lot of annuals, which makes a fire hazard. But other than that, it's a good winter country where we go for winter.
Raquel was saying that there's a lot of springs and water and stuff on the northern side, mm-hmm. too. Do you pipe most of that down to your winter, or mm-hmm. do you? Okay.
We've got, like we said before, maybe 20 miles of pipelines on that ranch, and the water comes out of some pretty big springs that are farther north. We take it down to that lower country. So as far as water, we're pretty blessed to have water that we have. We even during all the drought, they said most or all of the big ponds out on the strip were dry because it hadn't run water in so long. We always had water because we had those good springs, and they don't seem to vary too much, wet years or dry years.
That's nice.
So we've been fortunate to always have good water.
Yeah.
You should tell some grandma stories, just kind of tell about grandma out there a little bit.
Okay.
Broom.
My mom, she would ride a horse once in a while, but very, very seldom. She didn't like get on a horse very much.
She wasn't a big animal fan.
No.
Of any kind.
She liked her cats.
She liked to feed any dog that came by, but she didn't want to have a dog.
But she was always part of the, whatever we was doing, she was always there. She was always the one to build Brandon fires and keep the irons hot. She built a lot of fires, Brandon calves out there. What's another story about Grandma and her broom?
I guess you can tell Grandma and a broom story.
If we had an old cow that was notorious for tearing a gate down.
Or cheating out of the traps.
Yeah, Dad had put her on the other side of it. With a we trap cattle on those waters with, I don't know, you've seen the kind of logs that go, and then they walk through them and can't get out.
Can't come out, yeah.
Long time ago, we had this old Bremer cow, and she was pretty much Bremer. She was a gray Bremer cow. Really smart cow. Well-built. Well, not a narrow Bremer. She was a wide, real, real well-built cow. I can still picture her today, but she was smart enough. She'd go in those traps, but she'd come back and she knew how to get her head in there and get out of them. Just
how to wiggle it, just right.
And we caught her in there one day, and anyway, Grandma was sitting on that trap to kind of keep her away from it, and she wasn't scared of Grandma. She come and got in them poles and was just flipping them up in the air. These are heavy, big cedar tree logs.
And she's standing in there trying to keep her from coming out.
Yeah, she was up on top of them. I can remember her bouncing up in the air, but she never come off. Scared her to death.
That's funny.
My mom was always taking care of people. If we had a bunch of people out there or whatever, she was always fixing three meals a day for everybody, taking care of everybody. She was a hard worker.
She sounds like a cool lady.
Yeah.
And she kept us all managed, even her old, she was, old age on the farm.
She was very, very, very organized, yeah. With
she knew all every single thing that was going on, if the pivot stopped, or if there
bookwork
was a cow,
or paperwork, or, yeah, if there's anything out of the ordinary or wrong, she was on top of it. She lived to be 97.
Wow.
She had a sister that was lived to be 104 or 5.
Like that. Wow, that's cool.
Some of the things that I did way back, I wonder how I did them. I can remember going up on Mud Mountain in a pickup. It was in the spring because there was sheep herds down along the road down there. And about up there where that catchment is up on Mud Mountain, I had unloaded and rode up there.
The new one or the old one?
The catchment up on Mud Mountain, the old one.
Oh, okay.
I come in from the bottom.
Okay.
Anyway, I jumped my horse. We used to haul horse in a pickup around here. We didn't use trailers way back.
She was showing me some pictures of that old truck with their axe in the back.
Oh.
That was cool.
One of the old three-quarter ton trucks.
Well, it was actually the Datsun was the one. Oh, that one.
That one's barely room for a horse. Anyway, I run on some cattle up there, and there was a Maverick bull. He wasn't huge. He was probably at least a 800-pounder or something like that. And I remember roping that bull and leading him back to the truck. And I don't know how in the world, all alone, I got him loaded in that truck and got the horse loaded in the truck.
Oh, gosh.
And going back down, and those sheep guys from Orderville were along the road where there was sheep, and I'd stop and visit them, and sometimes they'd feed me some sourdough biscuits and mutton. But they couldn't figure out how I had gotten that bull loaded in that truck and that horse in that truck. And I don't know how I did either. Another time I roped a big Maverick bull right up on that rim where the trail where we drive cattle up out of goat camp, right up on top there. And it was a big black bull and had horns. Anyway, I roped him. I was on the old sorrel horse, old Blaze, and got him wrapped around the tree. And I must have got him down and tied him up. And he was one of those that wouldn't get in a trap. He'd just kind of run off. Anyway, for some reason, I wanted his horns off of him. So I walked off of that. I left Blaze up there, and I walked off that rim down to goat camp because the truck was down there, and I had a saw.
That's a long way.
That's a long ways. I remember it wasn't very far down there, but it was a long ways back up. But I went back up and sawed his horns off and branded him and turned him loose. But I must have wanted him
real bad
with his horns off. And
teach him a lesson that day.
I don't think I wouldn't tackle something like that today.
Like one of my earliest childhood memories was me and you out around Hobble, and I was on Blondie. And we were chasing a black bull that we had around over there, trying to get him to drive into the corral at Hobble. And for some reason, I kind of stayed up on the hill, and you went down to go get him. And he got on the fight and charged me and Blondie. And I had to just go, I didn't know what to do. I just came like barreling down the hill towards you, like, save me, save me. It probably wasn't as big a deal, but in my little kid mind, it was like the scariest thing that ever happened.
I don't remember that.
You were on Ribbon and I was on Blondie, and it was just me and you all by ourselves. And I was little. I was probably only like maybe 8 or 9, maybe.
Those old style cattle, they were pretty.
They were pretty mean.
Pretty bronco, yeah. They were. We never, all our lives, we've never worked cattle afoot.
You should have sailed in corrals or
sorting
guy.
Them or cutting them or loading them or. I've been out there and caught cattle, just rode in on them, going out and checking them there at Mud Springs, and would be perfectly able to go cut through them and load some cattle up, but
didn't have a horse.
Went clear back town to get a horse. That's all-day deal to go get a horse, but you just can't, those kind of cattle, you can't do them afoot. Can't work with them afoot. My thoughts on that is that's the best part of ranching is working cattle on a horse. I love that. It teaches your horse something.
Yeah.
If you just get off of them and do it afoot, your horse ain't gonna be a very good horse.
And it's so fun.
Just a trail horse can drive them in, but a good horse can cut cattle and work a gate and do all that stuff. A horse is your feet. That is a great feeling to be on a horse, and you can feel him. He's doing it. Yeah. He's working cattle. Kind of like a difference in dogs. A lot of dogs don't pay much attention to cattle or any animals. They're just dogs. But those cow dogs, it's in their mind. They it's in their breeding and to work cattle. You've seen them. A lot of them are pretty good. Same way with horses. Yeah.
That concludes my interview with Steve Layton. If you like what you're listening to, please leave us a rating and a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. And like always, to put a face behind the name with those that we are interviewing, you can head over to our Instagram page. It's @cowboystories_podcast. And lastly, if you would like to support this podcast, there's a link at the end of our show notes. Click that link and it'll give you several options to choose from in order to support this podcast. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.